Hello, Adam.
Hello, Adam. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I'd like to ask you about how you would describe finding Rothko.
Well, finding Rothko is essentially a work in four movements that are played without pause. It's completely continuous, and each movement is based on a different painting by Mark Rothko.
These four movements, I understand, are orange, yellow, red, and wine.
Yes, so for those who know Mark Rothko's work, the majority of his paintings are untitled. Either they're simply called Untitled and then in parentheses, like for instance, the first painting is called Untitled, and then in parentheses it says violet, black, orange, yellow on white, and red. And that painting was from 1949. And so when I saw the painting in person, I was very much drawn to the orange aspect of it. Hence the title Orange. But many of his other paintings are just numbered. For instance, the second movement is actually just titled Number 5 slash Number 22 from 1950. So that doesn't really give you that much information. I wanted to have a color palette to describe each movement.
I noticed looking at his works chronologically, they start with scenes I might recognize, say a person descending into a subway station, then later getting into these horizontal bands of color on a vertical canvas. And those are the ones you're talking about, right?
Yeah, so I mean, like most artists, everyone goes through different stages, and certainly he was more of a realist at first, but he's most well known for being an abstract expressionist, and then his later stage, or I guess his most mature stage, his paintings are called these multiform paintings, which is exactly what you said. You have a couple of rectangles stacked on top of each other, and you have this juxtaposition of these jarring different colors. And so I was certainly drawn to his last period.
Finding Rothko, where did you get the name? Finding the artist or finding the painting?
Yeah, a bit of both. So when I decided to write this piece based on Mark Rothko, it was really important that I could see each painting in person. And at the time that the commission came about, I was still a student at Juilliard. And one of the perks being a student, a grad student in New York City, is you get free access to so many of the museums. And I would frequently go to the MoMA or the Met or the Whitney or the Guggenheim. And I believe it was actually at the Guggenheim that I discovered Rothko for the first time. It may have been the MoMA. I forget at this point. But I saw the paintings in person, or two of the paintings in person. I just fell in love with them. And then I decided that for the other two paintings, I wanted to research his catalog and go see those paintings in person. So I actually found a book called Seeing Rothko that listed his entire catalog. And I investigated all the paintings. And then the ones that I was most drawn to, I tried to go see. And the fourth and final movement, Wine, that painting is by far my favorite work of his. But at the time, it was privately owned, and it was really, really hard to see it. And it took about 6 months to track it down and get permission to go to the owner's property and then visit the painting. So there was this discovery where I really did have to go find the paintings.
You may have just gone to the Guggenheim or the Museum of Modern Art and found some of his paintings, but this last one, you really had to find it.
I did have to find the last one, yes. And then the third to the third movement, Red, that painting is actually housed in Los Angeles, and I did actually fly out to Los Angeles to see it. But the fourth painting, because it was privately owned and not at a museum at the time, it wasn't out on loan. It really took such a long process to find, but I eventually was able to see it in person.
What explains the inspiration for turning something that's visual into something that's more aural?
You know, that's tough. I mean, for me, I've always been interested in visual art. When I was even in elementary school, I always thought I was going to become an architect. I'm very much interested in structure and forms. And so I think when I was visiting some of the museums in New York City and discovered Rothko for the first time, I had this visceral reaction to his work, and it just felt very profound to me. And when I was spending more time in front of the paintings, they felt very musical to me. And you know, I should also preface that before anyone goes to the concert, I'm not really setting the paintings to music. This isn't a film score or, I'm not scoring the paintings. They really sort of serve as the initial inspiration for the piece. So the music does stand on its own. And in fact, some orchestras never show the paintings and others choose to show the paintings. And I think both versions work very well.
I may not be able to look at the painting and get where a certain sonic quality or progression came from.
Yes, exactly.
About composing the piece, where did you start and how did you go about composing it?
So when I would visit the paintings, I brought a journal with me and I probably spent between 1 to 2 hours with each painting. And I essentially jotted down my reactions and thoughts, and just ideas that came about when seeing the work. And from that point, I then went to the piano and had all of these words in front of me, and I started to improvise and come up with thematic material. And because I was setting four different paintings, although it's by the same artist, I wanted to still somehow try to find a way to connect each movement. I decided to come up with a theme, which I sort of dubbed as Rothko's theme, which is this three-chord progression. And the piece begins announcing these three chords, and then the first movement in the first painting really sort of emerges. And then the three chords come back before the second movement, and then, of course, they come back for the third movement. And then the fourth movement, Wine, takes those three chords and actually fully develops them. So it sort of ties the entire piece together. So, I mean, it's interesting. The program this weekend has pictures at an exhibition, and we all know the famous Promenade, and you know, da 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 da, right? And that comes back throughout the piece, and that sort of bridges each movement. And so in a similar way, I wanted to create some type of chord structure or theme that would come back to sort of announce the arrival of each painting.
When I go to the concert on Friday or Saturday and I listen, what should I listen for?
Well, definitely listening to those chords, you'll know that you're moving on to the next painting. But each movement definitely explores a different sonic world while somehow thematically tying each movement into the next, sort of bridging from one movement to the next movement. So the first movement is very, very atmospheric and slow. And I think there's some very gentle orchestrations that happen. And that goes right into the second movement, which takes a little more energy and has more motion. And then the third movement, Red, is by far the most aggressive and angular and jagged and almost violent type of movement. And very much so has an improvisatory quality to it. I wanted to just imagine Rothko just throwing paint up on the canvas and then moving it all around until it became the exact structure that he wanted to create on the canvas. And then the fourth movement takes those three chords and creates an entire progression out of it. And for me, the fourth movement is by far the most beautiful movement of the entire piece.
Where they are all three put together, basically.
Yeah, sort of summarizes the journey of finding Rothko. It summarizes the journey of the music itself. It takes all the material. And for me, it was something that just needed to happen architecturally in order to feel satisfied with what was happening within the entire composition, because you still want to create a narrative and an arc, an overall shape that makes sense from start to finish.
Did you hear anything in your head as you began composing at first, or did you start with the improvisation?
So whenever I compose, I always sit down at the piano first and improvise for hours. It's the best way that I can generate the most honest and natural material, because it truly just comes from the subconscious when you're improvising. You're completely unaware of yourself. So I improvised and then came up with that chord progression that I really liked. And from there, I can remove myself from the piano and start to really get into the composition. For me, an improvisation isn't a composition. It could be the beginning of a composition, but it's more spontaneous than anything else. So you can improvise and generate material that you love, but then you really have to step away from the improvisation and actually compose. That said, the third movement, what also makes it interesting to me because I've been doing this with some of my later works, but this was the very first time I had done this. I used a MIDI sequencing program called Logic. And for the third movement, I improvised all of the movement on the piano, like just played all of it on the piano and did probably a dozen different improvisations and eventually combined sections from different improvisations to form the entire piece. But then I took all of that material and I essentially transcribed it in a way to create a movement that still represents that improvisation. So the movement itself takes traditional notation and it embeds it with a lot of graphic notation and aleatoric notation, where I set up these patterns and I essentially tell the performer to, you're going to play any of these notes in any order that you want. You're going to start at this beat and you're going to go all the way through until the downbeat of, you know, X measure. And so it what that does is there's a structure in that the movement will always more or less be the exact same duration, but the way someone plays it might be different from one night to the next.
What is it like to have what you composed and then you release it to the orchestra to perform it as they will?
Well, that's the beauty of this art form, in that for any composer, he or she will be at home working on a specific work for months, sometimes years, and you live with this material completely by yourself, and it's in your head, and you have a pretty good idea of what it's supposed to sound like. But when you put the double bar down at the end, you essentially relinquish control and you hand over the score to the conductor and to the performers. And, you know, Giacomo Bairros is a very dear friend and an incredibly talented conductor. And I know he's so excited to be the new music director of Amarillo. And he, you know, what he will bring to this performance will be entirely unique to that orchestra and that community versus when the piece has been played, you know, by the Atlanta Symphony or the Kansas City Symphony. So each conductor will bring their own musical sensibility into it, and each of the musicians of that respective orchestra will also bring their own nuance into it. So each performance is always different. That said, the music still speaks for itself and the ideas generally get conveyed. But you can have, I've had the performance, you know, from one orchestra, it was 16 minutes, and with another orchestra, it was 15 minutes. So there's usually no more than a minute gap between different performances, but that's, in music time, that's pretty substantial.
2006 is the year you composed this, which I might consider earlier in your career. Is that right?
Oh, yeah. I was 25 when I finished the work, and it wasn't premiered until January of 2007, but I was in the first year or second year of the doctoral program at Juilliard. So I was still a student. This was one of the very first commissions I had ever received. So it was a huge honor. And for me, this piece in particular has definitely helped launch my career. I mean, I think it's been performed by over 15 orchestras now, and it won a couple of competitions. So I'm very grateful for the commission. It was commissioned by Michael Stern and the Iris Orchestra in Germantown, Tennessee. So yeah, I guess you could say it's early on in my career.
7 years later, how does that process vary, or how is it the same as how you compose today?
My process is still more or less the same. I mean, I tend to have three different processes. One is I'm always at the piano to improvise, but when it comes to composing, I will either write completely by hand, pencil and paper, traditional, very traditional notation, or I will go to a computer and use Logic and I'll improvise and record multiple tracks and keep building a composition by adding layer upon layer. Or I will go right to Finale when I know exactly what it is that I want to do. I can basically open up Finale and enter the music into the score because it's already in my head at that point. But most of my pieces today will have three of those. I'll combine all three steps, processes into the equation. It just gives me a little more variety and it allows me to work in different ways.
Well, Adam Schoenberg, thank you for speaking with me today.
Adam, thank you so much for letting me speak as well.